That is what is happening inside the school systems today. Not only that, but our child also has to sit behind a plexiglass with a mask on their face. What it does to my heart, by the way, when I see these children, itty-bitty two-year-old toddlers, walking around with a mask on their face. Think about the psychological trauma of that. Think about the fact that right now in America, there are children that believe that that is normal because they've never seen anything different. There are children that believe it's normal to ask their parents where their mask is because they've never seen anything different. Do you guys realize what's going to come around the bend? People ask me why I was so outspoken, how I take such strong positions early on, and when people are unsure, right? I'm constantly in the press. I'm constantly getting killed because I go right for the jugular, no questions asked, because I can always predict the crazy. I just have a remarkable ability to just see the crazy coming down the block, you know? I could just see it. I will never forget the viciousness that I was hit with by both sides of the aisle, by the way, when the Me Too movement appeared, came out of nowhere. You know, suddenly it was hashtag Me Too, and it was trending on Twitter, and every girl was sharing their stories, and conservatives were silenced, and the left was giving them a platform, and everyone was saying, this is good. This is great. This is, of course, we should be talking about sexual assault and rape and rotten industries. That all sounds like a good thing. And it was so obvious to me that the left was going to use that as a tool to take people out, right? To say that we no longer believe in due process, that on the basis of a mere allegation, someone should be forced to step down from their job. I mean, I saw that crazy coming, right? And of course, this is what the left does. They like to create issues. They like to talk about issues that make people uncomfortable. We're dignified people. We don't want to be in a room. You never want to say to someone, oh, okay, maybe there's something wrong, you know, with just condemning people instantly for sexual assault allegations, because we're good people. Of course, but the reason that they go across and they find these subjects that make us uncomfortable is because it gives them so much power. When you're talking about race, they want white people to shut up. When they're talking about sexual assault, they want men to feel uncomfortable and for them to shut up. And when people are shutting up, that is when the left gets the most yards in the culture war, right? That is when the left runs the game in the culture war. Their goal is to make you feel uncomfortable to use your voice. Their goal is to silence Americans. People keep talking about the silent majority. I'm tired of the silent majority. I just want people to be the majority. Start speaking out and saying what you believe. Because if you don't, we're going to lose this country. We are, in this moment, right now, sitting in this auditorium, we are losing America. You know that. I know that. We've got a senile puppet for a president, right? And we've got a bunch of journalists that are basically trying to make it so that conservatives are not allowed to speak or meet or talk anymore. They used January 6th as almost a false flag operation to push through a bunch of radical change, because that's how the left operates. The left always needs an existential crisis to push through radical reform. Okay? And if there is no crisis, they will create one. They will make sure there is a crisis. They will take something that is bad and they will turn it into something that is terrible, because they need to make sure that you are fearful in order for them to execute radical reform. This is what happened during 9/11. We were told after 9/11 that this is just going to be temporary, right? We're going to change some things around the Patriot Act. You're going to have to take your shoes off. We're going to have to look through everything you have. We're going to have, you know, we're going to have this whole system when you go through the airports, but it's for your safety. Existential crisis, government takes control. And when government takes control, they never give it back. I think the only time I was outspoken and against Donald Trump when he was in office was with the coronavirus, when he made the decision to temporarily shut down all of America for a couple of weeks because he was facing so much mounting pressure. And I disagreed with him publicly, and I said to so many people who were so fearful in that moment that you just, when you are feeling fearful, you have to pause and you have to think. Fear is the name of the game. Fear is how they seize control of the country. Their entire job is to make you fearful so that they can seize more control. And I knew the second that he made the decision to shut down the country, I asked people, I said, do you understand that now we've just made it okay forever when he is not president? I know you think he's not going to abuse it. Of course we didn't think he was going to abuse it. But Donald Trump was not going to be president forever. And now we have just said that it's acceptable, that we have now set that precedent for the government to come in, to shut down our businesses, to tell us to stay at home, to force mask us, and to tell us what we are allowed to do and who we are allowed to see. You don't get those kinds of freedoms back. We set a very dangerous precedent. I don't think a single person in this room disagrees or didn't believe that the coronavirus was real. Of course, we understand that viruses in general are real. Viruses happen all across the world. They happen. Smallpox happened during the Revolutionary War, right? There are plagues that happen. There is suffering that happens. It's a condition of humanity. That was never the point. That was never the purpose of me speaking out against the shutdowns and against the lockdowns. It was because I realized that we were implementing a system, a global system, that was allowing people to take control and to take freedoms away from Americans. That's the situation that we're in today. That's the situation that we're in right now. That is why I've used my platform to speak out against this. People ask me, where do you get the courage from to just go out and to say something and to just say what you believe over and over and over again? And I always say that I look at the situation around the world, and you study history, and you learn about these absurd situations in other countries historically, and you go, how could that ever happen, right? How did so many people in a country allow such sheer evil to take place? It seems unfathomable when you look back at different countries, when you study socialist regimes, when you study the Nazi Party, when you study, you know, Mussolini. It seems impossible that an entire country of people allowed it to happen. Even when you look at Venezuela, forget history, think of present, right? You go, how is it possible that Venezuela should be one of the wealthiest countries based on its oil reserves? How is it possible that its people allowed this to happen? Well, this is how it's possible. This is how it's possible, because people were too fearful to speak out. Because people were too fearful to be called a name. You're too fearful because you don't want your neighbor to call you a racist. Don't you think those people that lost their countries completely, if they could look back and say, man, I would have been actually totally fine being called a racist. I should have said something. I should have said this is wrong. Man, I would have been totally fine losing a couple of friends. I should have said something before we got to where we are today. I bet all of those people that lived in those countries during those times think that in the retrospect. What are the things that you can do? That's another question I always get. Candace, what can I do? You know, you have a platform. First and foremost, if you're thinking Candace has a platform, so it's easier for her to say things, you're right, now it is, but 5 years ago, I was you. I was a person that had nothing but something to say, right? And I created my own platform on YouTube. And I always say to people in every room that you have to remember that it is what you do individually, decisions that you make individually, that are going to transform this country. It is the businesses that you stand behind, the products that you buy, the things that you tweet. Not everybody is the same person. I'm not saying everybody should go be me on Twitter and trend for 3 years because you just can't stop calling the left out on their BS, right? But we are in a cultural war. And in every type of a war, you have to figure out what you can contribute. Maybe you are a fighter like me. Maybe you are a front line fighter like me. Maybe you are willing to go out and to be smeared and to be libeled and to lose your friends like me. But maybe you're somebody else. Maybe you're a writer. Maybe you're a person who wants to write, who wants to create a website, who wants to get together a bunch of journalists, a bunch of patriots to write the actual truth. Maybe that's who you are. Battles and wars need those people as well, right? Maybe you're the person who's got so much money, it would be so easy for you to just finance the war, right? To sit back and say, I don't want to get my hands dirty, but let me stand behind some people that are willing to fight. I'll never forget that when I was on YouTube, when I started my channel, there was a man who lived in San Diego who reached out to me after I made my first video. I had quit my job, and I had no idea beyond 3 months how I was going to be able to survive and pay my bills, but I knew I had to start saying something. And a man in San Diego reached out to me and said, I really believe in you, kid. I want to give you $5,000. What that $5,000 meant for me was that I could keep the lights on and I could keep fighting, right? Think about that. For him, it was nothing. It was a drop in the bucket, but he found somebody who was saying something and he was doing something and he wanted to sponsor that individual. There are people that are like this in this room. I know that. Maybe you stand behind the organizations. Maybe it's you that gets people to run in elections. Because let me tell you something, for all the fighting that's happening in D.C., it is the local elections that matter the most. Run for the school board, right? We never hear these discussions being had, but we need to start thinking about the local elections. We need to start thinking about how we are going to make sure that this poison does not make it into the classrooms. We need to start making sure that the state houses are doing everything they can to clean up these elections, because let me tell you, if mail-in ballots are the way of the future, you can say goodbye to America. Full stop. I am not an extraordinary person. I'm not. And I make such a point to make sure people in every room understand that. I'm an ordinary person who is doing extra things right now, because every ordinary person should be doing extra things right now in America. I had a baby 4 months ago, 16 weeks. And it's so funny because I remember sitting down with Ali Stuckey, who's a podcaster, and talking to her on my show. And she had just had a child, and she said, oh, motherhood softens you in all the right ways, and I can't wait for everybody to have a child. She's like, even AOC, I want her to have a child. She said this. And she said, because things change when you have a child, and your perspective change when you have a child, and you become softened. And I was so excited when I got pregnant because I was waiting to get softened. And lo and behold, it hardened me. And it hardened me because suddenly I look at my child and I look at him and I think, is he going to grow up in the same America I'm going to grow up in? Suddenly the fight is a lot more serious for me, right? Before it's a political perspective, now it's my child's future. Is my child going to have to think that this is normal? It started for me and realizing what the left was doing. And I had to kind of think, how do we fight as conservatives? And I had to reverse engineer and think, when did this start for me? When did I start believing this poison? And it takes me back to my childhood. It really does. Because I really do believe that everything that the left is after right now in this country is destroying families, right? And because sometimes you look out and you go, what are they doing? Like, it just seems like they're everywhere all at once, just starting fires, a little fire over here, a little fire over there, and we're just running side to side trying to put the fires out. And what's actually connecting all of these fires the left is starting? What is the connection? What is the thread that ties them all together? Why are we talking about gendered, non-gendered restrooms, right? Like, that seems like a random fire to start. Like, nobody ever was stressed out when they saw the word bathroom on a sign. No one was like, oh my gosh, this is horrible. But the left picked up this battle and they stuck it to us, and suddenly we are like really in the throes of, we need bathrooms that say non-binary, full inclusion. We've got more than 26 genders. Like, why did they pick that particular battle, right? Then you look over and then you see the feminist camp, right? And you've got the women that are screeching about the patriarchy, and they want to undo traditional families, and they need men to understand how horrible and backwards they are. And they're going, why is feminism becoming so toxic, right? It's not so much toxic masculinity that concerns me as much as toxic feminism does right now in this country. You go, what's up with that, right? Then you think, what the heck is going on with, okay, you guys, you had the abortion battle, and now they're talking about wanting to abort children at 9 months in the womb. What the heck is going on? What do these three crazy things, all of these crazy things that the left is doing, have in common? And the answer is family. That's what the left is trying to do. They're trying to destroy family. If you've studied Karl Marx, if you've studied the Communist Manifesto, you know that Marxists have always wanted to attack the family. That was seen as a structure that had to be destroyed in order for Marxist ideology to flourish. So when you say, why are they telling kids to pick their genders? Why are they encouraging children to mutilate their bodies, right? Telling them in kindergarten classrooms that they can pick their genders in California. In certain districts in California, they've already passing that down, that children can pick their genders. They're trying to push through policies that allow children to get gender reassignment surgery before they are even of age. There are children that are running around saying, I am in the wrong body. I am a non-body. This term didn't exist when I was in school, right? So I know that this child is being taught that because it didn't exist 10 years ago, right? The purpose of that is because a child that mutilates their body will never have children, will never have offspring. You've already destroyed the family. When you talk about the radicalization of that, they're after family, right? When you talk about feminists and why they are constantly attacking men, and trying to genuinely raise women up to believe that they should not aspire to traditional family roles, where they're telling women to do more, more, more. You should be the CEO of a company. You shouldn't think that you have to have children. You shouldn't want to have children. You should want to be both the man and the woman. In fact, at the same time that they're encouraging women to act more like men, they are encouraging men to act more like women, right? It's bizarre. It's totally crazy. They're constantly telling men this is toxic masculinity, all displays of masculinity are wrong, at the same time that they're telling women to man up. And that's to create confusion. That's because that will eventually corrode the values of family. And families will always be in the way of big government. And socialism is big government, right? They need to make sure that children that are coming up do not turn to their mother and their father at a dinner table for answers. It's the same reason why they are so actively trying to destroy the pillar of faith. Talk about a pinnacle that I thought we'd never reach in this country, shutting down churches during COVID-19, right? What was that all about? I lived in DC during that time. They were shutting down churches. We could no longer go to church during COVID-19. And you say, why is there this attack on churches? Why are they trying to make preachers and pastors take on this leftist ideology? Well, it's because once you remove faith and once you remove family, the government becomes the faith. The government becomes the family. They want people to drop down on their knees and say, I'm in pain, not God, how can you help me, but government, how can you help me? What policy can the government give me to help me get on my two feet? That's what they want. They want to marry people to the government. The experiment, when you talk about that, when they first started realizing that that could actually be done and done successfully, was with Black America. Black America has always been the testing ground for leftist policies. Black America has always been the experiment for Democrats. When I wrote my book, Blackout, I had quite the fight. Thank you very much. You guys have no idea how hard I fought to write that book with Simon and Schuster. I'm probably one of the only conservatives that actually wrote their own book. Usually they get a ghostwriter, put their face on it, and that's it. I wrote every single word of that book, and it was an uphill battle with Simon and Schuster, who wanted to gut it and turn it into something else. From the beginning, from the subtitle, I picked the subtitle of the book, Blackout, How Black America Can Make Its Second Escape from Democrat Plantations, right? And the Simon Schuster said, oh no, that's too strong, right? It's offensive. I'm like, that's the point. And then the Washington Post ran a hit piece on me saying that I've popularized the phrase, Candace Owens has popularized the phrase amongst Republicans, Democrat plantation, and how dare she? That is so offensive. That's the point. But not only is that the point, I then wrote an entire chapter describing what I meant, because I wasn't saying it to just be offensive. I was saying it because I meant it. And I want you guys to understand this. Democrats never stopped their plantations of slavery. They just updated them. They remodeled them. They refashioned them for the times. When you think about the times of slavery, you think about what it actually took for a plantation owner to maintain its slaves. One element was that they had to make sure via slave codes that no slave was allowed to learn to read. Okay? No slave was allowed to learn to read. That was actually such a crucial philosophy, such a crucial law, that if you were a white person during those times and you were taught teaching a slave to read, you could also be charged. You could also be punished. You say, Canada doesn't exist today. Black people are allowed to learn how to read. Really? 75% of black boys in California can't pass a basic reading exam. Across five schools in Baltimore, they couldn't find a single child that was proficient in reading and writing. A single child across five schools in the inner cities. You want to know why they're teaching critical race theory? You want to know also why they're pushing that down the pipeline? It's to make sure that the kids are dumber and dumber and dumber and yet convinced that they're super educated. And I don't say that in jest. I do not say that in jest. If you read Thomas Sowell like I do, which I recommend you do from cover to cover always, he wrote a book called Inside the American Education System, The Lies, the Dogma, and the Deception. And in this book, I was floored to learn that Americans that are living right now, we are producing literally, I'm not saying this to be funny, the dumbest kids that have ever existed in America. From the standardized test perspective, these are the dumbest kids. You say, this is math, this is reading, answer these questions. These kids are the dumbest. Yet, here's the interesting part. We have never given out more degrees. So these kids have the most degrees, and yet they are factually speaking dumber than they've ever been. That's an interesting equation, right? It's an interesting equation. You got to think about that. You have to say, why would we do that? Why are we handing out degrees? How is it possible that we're handing out more degrees? These kids have the most degrees that we've ever had, and yet they're dumber. How does that work? Well, it works because if you do a cursory search and you see what children can actually study in school, you'll be shocked what you can get a degree in. You can get a degree in gender studies. I thought I'd check it off in kindergarten when they said two genders, boys' bathroom, girls' bathroom, right? Now you can spend 4 years learning what it took me in one class in kindergarten to learn. That's a meaningless degree. You can get degrees. You can get degrees in civic responsibility, social responsibility. They're handing out woke degrees and keeping kids for 4 years, putting them in debt $100,000, like me. I had $100,000 of student loan debt to give them a meaningless degree. Why are they doing that? Well, because they know that these kids will come out and they will know nothing, but they will be convinced that they know everything. They want them to be passionately stupid. That's the only way to describe it. To be passionate about their stupidity. And you might say, why does the government want that, right? Because imagine being a kid who spent 4 years getting your gender studies degree, being so convinced and so pompous and so arrogant and going out into society and finding out that you can't get a job. Because as it turns out, we don't need that many people that are majors in gender studies to get the day going, right? And so you imagine being that kid who then sees the kid that he went to school with that didn't go to college. That kid's fixing air conditionings, and he's making six figures because it turns out we need a couple of people that can do some plumbing and can fix some air conditionings. And so what happens to that kid who went to college? He becomes angry. He becomes angry. Because he feels like he was robbed. He's angry that that kid is more successful than him and he went to trade school. He's angry that that kid maybe tacked along with his dad to work and he's making more money than he is, doesn't understand it. So of course that kid thinks the system is broken. I did everything right, the system is broken. And that kid has learned in school that the system is broken because capitalism is backwards, because capitalism is wrong. So that's part of the plantation economics, right? Make sure the slaves don't learn. I meant it when I said that. The second piece of Democrat plantations when they were maintaining them in the South was ensuring that families were torn apart. Isn't that something, right? They needed to make sure, and I remember reading Booker T. Washington's Up From Slavery. In the first chapter, he talks about how when his mother died, he felt nothing. Because as a slave, it was nothing to lose your relatives. You just constantly were being traded from plantation to plantation. So they wanted to make sure that they were severing familial relations. Does that answer your question when you look up and you say, how is it possible that families are so destroyed? That in the 1960s, there were about 20% of African-American families that were being, African-American children that were being raised without a father in the home, and they thought it was a crisis. Today, that number is 75% of black children that are being raised without a father in the home. Father absence is one of the biggest epidemics that we are facing in this country, if you want to talk about a pandemic. When I said, bring back manly men, when I said, we need masculinity, I meant it. I meant it. We need strong men to raise strong families, to lead strong households. The left understood that. The left understood that forever. The Democrats have understood that forever, and that is the reason why they routinely attack families. It's why they want your children to mutilate themselves. They want to make sure they're so confused and so backwards. By the time they wake up, it'll be too late. It'll be too late because your family will be broken down in a thousand different ways. That's why they want abortions, more abortions. That's why they want people to believe that it's irresponsible to have children, says the Green New Deal. It's irresponsible. Because the planet's going to be dead in 10 years. How many of you guys survived the planet being dead from the time you were in high school? Because I was told, crazy. Look at that. We should go by a lot of faith that the government can fix all of our issues. So much faith that the government understands how many human lives are worth being born. How do we reverse that? Every single person in here, I believe, has had a series of experiences that are prompting them to do something great in this world. At the moment that you believe in yourself, at the moment that you get back to your center, that you align yourself with the universe, with God, the universe will open itself up to you. It certainly did for me. Maybe not every person is going to do what I did. Maybe not every person is going to quit their job and decide they're going to make YouTube videos. But make no mistake, there is a cultural war happening, and every single one of you can do something and participate in it in some regard. My focus, obviously, has been on presenting a new perspective to the black community. I think we are in desperate need of new voices in the black community. We are in desperate need of somebody that will stand on a platform and say, hey, it's actually not cool to be a victim. There's no value in being a victim. You win no awards for being a victim, unless you're Colin Kaepernick. I think he made a pretty sweet deal off of being a victim, so credit to him where credit is due. But the message that he is selling to people, of course, is not going to get them anywhere. At the moment that you believe that you can't, you won't. At the moment that you believe that you can, you will. Why is that controversial? Why wouldn't the left want to tell the truth about me, that I stand on a stage and I tell people all across the country that I believe in them? That's what I'm saying. Every time I stand on a stage in a room, at a university, at a college, I say, hey guys, I believe you. I believe in you. You can do it without government handouts. You can do it based off of good ideas. You can do it based off of hard work. You can do it with Jesus Christ. Of course, if every single person in the world thought that, if every single person in the world woke up with confidence and said, I can do it and I can contribute, and my life, my birth has meant something, it means something to this world, and I'm going to contribute something, you would see naturally that government would shrink.
That when people were faced with problems, they wouldn't run to an arbitrary welfare system. They would turn to God, they would turn to their communities, and they would nurse themselves back to health. That's what you would see. And that is why I believe in my heart that I have been considered a threat to the left and to the establishment. Kanye West, man, he's a wonderful man. It's so great to look back at everything now and to remember his song, Jesus Walks. How many of you guys know that song? And he made that song, he made that hip-hop song, Jesus Walks, because people told him that he couldn't talk about Jesus and he couldn't make Jesus cool. So he made it a number one album. He made it a number one track talking about Jesus and feeling that Jesus was walking with him in what he was doing. The gift of Kanye West isn't because he is one of the biggest stars in the world. The gift of Kanye West and that simple seven-word tweet that broke the internet, I love the way Candace Owens thinks, is that he opened people's hearts and people's minds to a different perspective. The gift of Kanye West putting on the MAGA hat was that it completely destroyed the narrative. I love Donald Trump. First and foremost, he's pointedly hilarious. I actually genuinely feel bad that there are people that are not enjoying Donald Trump in office. I don't understand how they don't understand how hilarious President Donald Trump is. Aside from that, he's an unbelievably strong leader. To stand in the face of the entire United Nations Assembly yesterday and to say that America will be governed by Americans and not by globalists. What is it that President Donald Trump, Kanye West, and Candace Owens have in common that we have grown so fond of each other? I think Kanye West describes it as dragon energy. And to me, I think it's individualism. It's believing in yourself. It's standing up in the face of everybody telling you you can't. You're not allowed to think that. You're a black man. You can't think that. You're not allowed to think that. You're not a woman. You have to think this because you're a woman. It's standing up in the face of all of that and saying, no, I am my own person. I am governed by what I believe to be truth. And I can live up to any expectation that I set for myself. I think that is an energy, that is a love, and that is a passion that I hope that I work every day to share with the world. Thank you guys so much for having me.